gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
What are you getting so crazy about? It's just music.
Welcome to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. I'm Jim DeRogatis, the pop music critic at the Chicago Sun-Times.
And I'm Greg Kot. I write about rock and roll for the Chicago Tribune. Today on the world's only rock and roll talk show, we have got one of the most exciting new voices in hip-hop music, Lupe Fiasco, three-time Grammy nominee, in our studio for a live performance.
Plus, we'll review the new albums by chart-topper Norah Jones and indie rock rave's Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah.
It's Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media, and time now for some music news. Well, for more than 20 years, the Police could not stand to be so close to each other, but finally...
Famously, the last performance at Shea Stadium in New York, they rode into the stadium in three separate limousines from different directions.
And who knows how they're going to be arriving to the Grammy Awards on February 11th, but that is, in fact, when Andy Summers, Stewart Copeland, and Sting will be reuniting for the first time. Apparently not the only time. This is just a prelude, their nationally televised appearance on the Grammys, to a big world tour. No word about whether any new music is going to result, but apparently one of the most anticipated reunions of the last two decades is finally going to happen this summer.
We just had Andy Summers on the show a couple of weeks ago talking about his book, and I just don't think that Gordon Sumner, that's, you know, Sting to the rest of the world, and Stewart Copeland actually read it, because if they did, you know, there was no love in those pages.
He couched his answer to our question, you know, the Sting question, what do you think of Sting's solo music? He was very, very diplomatic.
I baited him. I said, what do you think of that medieval loot album that Sting just put out? He wouldn't even go up for
it.
He
would not jump for the bait.
I think he's written some beautiful songs. You know, I mean, amongst all those albums, there's some really great ones there. And I don't really want to comment negatively on Sting because why would I? You know, I mean, I think about the history we shared and with Stewart. And, you know, I think of these guys as my brothers. I love them. And I will never want to get negative about it, you know. And I think it would be stupid anyway, because if you ever want to do a reunion tour like that, you can't get like that. And I just think we're so lucky to have had that.
Clearly, money has been bandied about. I'm sure they looked at the kind of money they could make on this tour, and it was too much to resist.
No, they're not even talking arenas. They're going right for stadiums.
Oh, my God, yeah. This is definitely one of the most anticipated tours of the summer. But the reunion tours are going through the roof here.
It's going to be the year of the reunion.
A Rage Against the Machine is definitely booked for an April 29th show at the Coachella Music Festival in California. That means that Tom Morello, Brad Wilk, and Tim Comerford are going to reunite with original vocalist Zach DeLaRocca.
Who's just been so busy.
Yeah, hasn't done a thing, really, since that band broke up in 2000. The other three have been in the band Audioslave, which continues to disappoint people. So apparently the time ripe for a reunion there, but it appears to be, at this point, only a one-off. We've got the Smashing Pumpkins back in the recording studio, or what's left of them. That means Billy Corgan, Jimmy Chamberlain, and who knows who else.
It's not fair to say that it's a reunion unless all the four members that were most famous were there.
I agree.
You know, if Darcy Retzky, the bass player, and James Iha, the guitarist, aren't there along with Billy Corgan and Jimmy Chamberlain, it's not the Smashing Pumpkins.
Yes. You know. And then we will answer the question of who really is Van Halen. They are going out on a 40-day tour this summer with David Lee Roth as the vocalist. Their first vocalist is now considered the vocalist in Van Halen. Sammy Hagar and that other guy, Gary Cherone, apparently don't count.
Greg, on a previous show, we mentioned the Genesis reunion, or at least the later incarnation of Tony Banks, Mike Rutherford, and Phil Collins. Who else would we really like to see?
I think the Smiths is the one that's kind of hanging out there.
Four original members.
Among the 80s bands. The four original members are still very much alive. Morrissey's out there, of course, with his solo career going very well. And Johnny Marr, of all people, is in Modest Mouse these days. So I think they would play larger venues than they ever have in the United States, much like the Pixies did when they came back the second time.
I'm still waiting for Pink Floyd. I want my Floyd back. Four original guys are still there. Sid Barrett just died, their original inspiration. It's time. It's time to bury the hatchet. They paved the way with Live 8.
And then, of course, The Replacements. You know, one of those bands that most of the members are out there, with the exception of Bob Stinson. But, you know, Tommy Stinson.
Well, being dead is a real
Paul
detriment.
Westerberg,
yeah.
You know, Chris Marrs. I mean, there are original members out there to be had that could be playing in a reunion show. And it would be big if it did happen.
Good night,
No, that is not Tom Waits singing that luxury car company ad. We were scrutinizing John Mellencamp just last week on this show for selling out to a car commercial. It's disgusting. But Tom Waits has, throughout his career, now you are the world's biggest Tom Waits fan. I am skeptical. I am not a huge Waits
skeptical,
fan.
Skeptical? You hate the guy.
Yeah, that would
just
be
come
one
right
way
on say
we could say that. But I applaud Waits for him fighting not to have his music corrupted in advertising. There was a snack food a couple of years ago that appropriated a Waits sounding vocal, and he sued them and he won. What happened here was that you had this luxury car company for ads that aired in Scandinavia using a very Waits-sounding voice to sell their car. Now, they had originally approached him and said, would you record this for me? He said, no, I don't do that. I don't do it. No way. So then they just hired some guy who sounded just like him. Despite the previous history of somebody else getting burned for doing that, a court in Frankfurt, Germany, said that Waits was within his rights. They awarded him some money. Nobody's talking about how much. And he's giving it all to charity.
Yeah.
So I will applaud Tom Waits, although I still think Captain Beefheart should sue Waits for Waits ripping off Beefheart's whole career.
A video clip called Amateur by one Lassie Gertzen that has been viewed 2.8 million times on YouTube.com, the video website. Jim, the reason we're playing that video is that someday the Lassie Gertzens of the world may be rewarded for their enterprise in getting their videos aired on YouTube and actually viewed by as many as 2.8 million people.
Yeah, because here was this guy who couldn't even play the drums, but was a good video editor, made this home video with all these cuts that makes it seem as if he can play the drums.
Yeah.
2.8 million people, YouTube's going to start paying the makers of these amateur videos, right?
Well, so they say. The founder of YouTube, Chad Hurley, filled with hubris after they've been just bought for $1.6 billion by Google, it wants to start sharing some of the revenue. If a kid in his basement out there makes a video with non-copyrighted material, in other words, original material, and attracts viewers, he wants to find a way to share the advertising revenue that would garner with the creator of that video.
Well, even if it's like half a cent per viewing or something, somebody like Lassie, you know, with 2.8 million views, he'd be sitting pretty, get himself some real drum lessons.
Exactly. And this is an extraordinary, I think, development in that it is basically throwing out to the world, make a video, find an audience, we'll reward you for it. I think it's revolutionizing A&R, the business of talent scouting, on which the record industry was founded. Meanwhile, you've got the record industry going in the opposite direction, where it's continuing to consolidate to create these bigger corporations, which are offering a smaller and smaller window of opportunity to the artists of the world. And YouTube is just throwing the doors open and saying, everybody's welcome. If you can find an audience, you know, you're going to get paid for it.
The big news last week in the industry was that the third largest music company in the world announced that it is merging two of its labels, both of them legendary for the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Capitol Records is now going to be part of Virgin Records. Capitol, the label that gave us the Beatles, is not really going to be its own record company anymore. They sold the famous Capitol Tower, the landmark in Los Angeles, a while back. They're going to be moving their offices out of there. It's kind of a sad day in the music industry. A lot of layoffs expected.
And a lot of bands are going to get cut. I mean, this is a label, Capitol, with bands like the Decemberists and Coldplay.
Okay, Go.
Some of these bands may not survive these cuts. The Redwalls, who made a terrific debut record for Capitol, that didn't really sell that well. There's some real doubts as to whether that second album, which is almost done, is even going to come out because of this restructuring.
Sure. You mentioned Coldplay. Coldplay was the band that was supposed to, quote-unquote, save Capitol Records with their third album, and it didn't happen. They made an art rock record instead, underperformed from what Capitol had been hoping. This brings us to our last guest story today and the obligatory Brian Eno reference. As it gears up to go record its fourth album, Coldplay is going to be produced by Brian Eno, which is very exciting.
Wait a minute. I mean, they keep drawing these U2 comparisons, and now they're going into the studio with Eno, who helped U2 craft the Joshua Tree and big albums like that. I mean, come on.
Eno worked with U2 for 10 years,
yeah.
All the way through Achtung Baby. Yeah, I don't know. If you don't want to be compared to U2, it doesn't seem like you ought to hire U2's producer. I always admire Coldplay. You know, I admire their ambition, at least, and I think that maybe Eno will be able to get them to do something interesting. But also, meanwhile, Chris Martin is going to be on the next Kanye West single, the first single from Kanye's third album, Graduation. He's singing on this song called Homecoming.
Wow, so Bono's out there saving the world, and meanwhile, Chris Martin is out there working with Kanye West and Brian Eno. Who's got the better life, right?
Chris, and he's married to Gwyneth. Yeah.
You're listening to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. A few weeks ago, Lupe Fiasco stopped by the studio. He is a three-time Grammy nominee. His debut record, one of the most lauded of 2006. He was in the studio for a conversation and a live performance.
Hey, funny guy and a really good talker. I think we got to ask two or three questions, and then he just ran with the ball, as you'll hear.
All right, you are listening to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot, he's Jim DeRogatis, and we're here with...
Lupe Fiasco!
Oh, my God!
He needs no introduction, he does it himself.
Your mom and dad call you Wasilu Muhammad Jaco, correct?
Yes, that's what they say my name is.
Will they call you Lupe now around the when they run into you?
Yeah, and it's unsettling that my mother calls me Lupe.
Except when she's mad at you, right?
Yeah, it's like, she's like, Wasilu, can I have... $90,000.
You see, I'm in trouble when my mom says, James.
Why would you be in trouble like that, though?
Because we all have moms and we get in trouble sometimes, man. You know that. What are you talking about?
Okay, all right.
Mine is the full Christian name rule. If they call you by your full Christian name, then you're really in deep trouble. Gregory means you're in trouble.
Oh,
Greg,
really?
Greg, you know.
Everything's
hello,
fine.
Greg. Everything's fine.
James, come from out of the basement. Yeah, you've been there way too long.
Exactly.
All right.
Exactly.
Let's give a little background on this wisecracker here. This
pompous.
Yes.
He's going to call you Gregory, and you're going to be in trouble.
He's going to call me Gregory, and I'm going to be in trouble. But
yes, Gregory.
We have one of the most anticipated debut albums of 2006, Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor. After 6 years and three label deals, finally came out. One of the most talked about phenomenons on the internet for years and years, recontextualizing tracks by Kanye West, The Gorillaz. I think you were a star on the internet before the mainstream world had heard about you.
Yeah.
And now, as a result of Lupe Fiasco's Food and Liquor, we have a man with three Grammy nominations sitting here in the studio. Mm-hmm.
See, it bled into the outer net.
You said that your estimation was that some 9 million copies of your album were downloaded before it was even officially released.
Between the time that it leaked and it officially came out, which was a span of like 2.5, maybe 3 months, it was downloaded about 9 million times.
And clearly a different type of hip-hop record, a major label release, but yet the majority of it was recorded by your guys, Soundtrack and Pro, two relative unknowns in hip-hop, which is almost never done.
Mm-hmm.
How were you able to, first of all, establish that with the label, unlike many other hip-hop artists starting out?
A jousting match. No, it was really just show and prove. And even it was show and not prove, And a lot of it was just put it on radio before the record label knows. But it was a business decision, as well as a personal decision where it was like, I'm going to give my homies, a chance to shine. And I know that they're good enough to compete with these other producers that they're going to make a statement. And it came out in Soundtrack having, two Grammy nominations on his first official record ever. So I think we showed and we proved. And even to this day, the record company is still a little, they still don't get it. They still don't know how. And it's like, well, it was good music.
You talk about Kick Push, though, the first single off the record, which, marvelous single. I mean, Jim and I are huge fans of that.
We're going to have to talk about Kick Push quite a bit, but let's let people hear it first.
Absolutely.
Because there's no better way to get Lupe Fiasco introduced if people don't know him than to have him perform this. So you're game to play this one.
Yeah, I'm good.
All right, let's hear Kick Push by Lupe Fiasco.
All right. And it goes like, what up, y'all? Yeah, Soundtrack, what's poppin', baby? If y'all know me out there,
I go by the name of Lupe Fiasco. Yeah, representing that first and 15. Yeah, and this song right here, I dedicate this song right here to all my homies out there grinding. You know what I'm saying? Legally and illegally. You know what I'm talking about? So, check it out. First got it when he was 6, didn't know any tricks. Matter of fact, first time he got on and he slipped, he landed on his hip and he busted his lip. And for a week he had to talk with a lisp like this. Now we can end the story right here, but shorty didn't quit, it was something in the air. Yeah, he said it was something so appealing, he couldn't fight the feeling. Something about it, he knew we couldn't doubt it, couldn't understand it. Branded, since the first kickflip he landed, labeled a misfit, a bandit. His neighbors couldn't stand it, so he was banished to the park. Started in the morning, wouldn't stop after dark. Yeah, when they said it's getting late in here, so I'm sorry, young man, there's no skating here. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And away he rolled, just a rebel to the world with no place to go. And so we kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come and skate with me, just a rebel, looking for a place to be. So let's kick,
you kick, you kick, you kick, you kick,
and push,
you push, you push, you push, you push,
and coast. Coast. Yeah. My man got a little older, became a better roller. Yeah, no helmet, hell bent on killing himself is what his mama said, but he was feeling himself. He got a little more swagger in his style. Met his girlfriend, she was clapping in the crowd. Love is what was happening to him now. He said I would marry you, but I'm engaged to these Ariels and Barrios. I don't think this board is strong enough to carry two. She said, bow, I weigh 120 pounds. Now, let me make one thing clear. I don't need to ride yours, I got mine right here. So she took him to a spot he didn't know about. Some odd in the apartment parking lot. She said, I don't normally take dates in here. Security came and said, I'm sorry, there's no skating in here.
And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick.
And the way they roll, just lovers intertwined with no place to go. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come and skate with me, just a rebel, looking for a place to be. So let's kick,
kick, you kick, you kick, you kick,
and push,
push, you push, you push, you push,
and coast.
Yeah,
swanky. Before we knew we had a crew, there wasn't no punk, and they Spitfire shirts and SB dunks. They would push till they couldn't skate no more. Office building lobbies wasn't safe no more, and it wasn't like they wasn't getting chased no more. Just the freedom was better than breathing, they said. An escape route they used to escape out. When things got crazy, they needed to break out. They hit to any place with stairs, any good grinds, the world was theirs. Yeah, and they four wheels would take them there, until the cops came and said, there's no skating here. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. And away they roll, just rebels without a cause, with no place to go. And so they kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, kick, push, coast. So come and skate with me, just a rebel, looking for a place to be. So let's kick,
you kick, you kick, kick, and push,
push, push, push, push,
and coast.
That's what you do. Ha-ha.
Man, I love that song. That was a terrific live performance of one of my favorite songs of 2006, Kick Push from Lupe Fiasco. We're going to be back with Lupe in a moment, and later on in the show we'll have reviews of Norah Jones and Clap Your Hands Say Yeah.
That's a minute from now on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
Daydreams, I dream of you amid the flowers. for a couple of hours. Such a beautiful day.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. We are in the midst of our spirited chat with rapper Lupe Fiasco. A little bit later, we're going to hear him perform another track in our studio with his guest vocalist, Matthew Santos.
But first, a little bit more discussion about Kick Push, the track you're hearing underneath us now and the first single from the album.
There are certain singles in the history of pop music, of rock and roll, if you will. It's all rock and roll to me. You, Public Enemy, okay? I think you've done for skateboarding what the Beach Boys did for surfing. You listen to some of the great, or Jan and Dean, you know, or Wipeout, right? Uh-huh. You listen to those songs and you get the sense. I've never surfed, and we don't live by the ocean. We're in Chicago. Right. I have no idea what that feels like. But the thing that amazes me about Kick Push is the way the music and your vocals combine to give the sense of motion, the sense of freedom and exhilaration. You know, I mean, was that a goal from the beginning where I'm going to use my voice to simulate the experience of being on that skateboard?
Kick Push was weird. That was a weird experience. I did it for a local skate shop called Uprise. I did it for their skate DVD. And I think since there was no real intention to put it out, like I was in the studio comfortable, you know? I mean, when I did the first verse and I did the hook, and I was like, maybe I should just do another verse. And I did another verse, and I didn't write any of it. You know, it was just me at the mic, you know, going maybe do about four or five lines and then stop and then think of four or five more and then attach those to it. And I guess because it wasn't that real weight, it was like, you need a single and it needs to be about this and we have this particular beat for it. You know, it was like me having fun.
Yeah.
And I think that came across. It was like he was actually having fun making this record about people having fun.
So it wasn't even conscious the way the hook, you know, I mean, when you say coast and you draw it out as just like the skateboard rolling past.
It was a little onomatopoeia.
The subject matter and the production on that record were, I think, a really breaking point for a lot of people in terms of this is a fresh sound for hip hop. Nothing really sounds like this. The sample on that is out of left field. Weren't you saying like Filipino jazz horns or something?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, who would have thought of that, you know?
Soundtrack, who's actually Filipino. And it came from a record out of his father's collection. And it just happened to be this old, unreleased jazz record from a Filipino jazz band.
Ikaw pala'y mayroong ibang minamahal. Di mo pinagtapat noong una pala.
It was amazing. Like, and for soundtrack to go and get that from that, like that whole history and everything behind it. Like, and a lot of Filipino people were like, yo, that's fresh.
The horns, like that, it has that breezy sound, and it seemed like it influenced the way you decided to phrase the words and everything.
It was. To me, originally, I was like, yo, this is a dope beat to skate to, you know? And so I was just going to give Uprise the beat. I'm like, yo, just use this as background music to skate to. Because to me, it seemed like, you know, watching skate DVDs and watching skaters and stuff like that, it seems like, wow, like you could skate to this record. And it was the lyrics were really just like a commercial, you know what I'm saying? In a sense where it's like, let me just put this on top and it just fit.
Right now, every musician has one of these moments of just crystalline discovery. You ever see that movie Almost Famous where the kid's flipping through his sister's records and discovers The Who? Mm-hmm. Something like that. What's the first hip-hop record you heard
that
really opened your eyes? I mean, you know, not just in passing, but that you said, wow.
I gotta have this and acquire this record?
Yeah.
I want to
be this even more.
Third grade, Ain't Nothing But a G-Thang, Snoop Dogg and Dr. Dre. That was the first. I remember I had a little Walkman, and I had the tape. It was the single. And I remember I used to go to school, and on my way to school, I would be bumping Ain't Nothing But a G-Thang, and I was in third grade.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first record. That wasn't the first record that made me want to rap or inspire me to be a rapper or anything like that. But that was the first, like, hip-hop record that I remember going out of my way, finding, and playing.
But okay. you were wrestling with this idea, too, throughout your childhood. I mean, mm-hmm. you address it on the record where you talk about the song where you talk about, I used to hate hip-hop. And mm-hmm. You were going through some issues with the subject matter of hip-hop. And as a young man, recognize that there may be some contradictions here that you didn't necessarily want to incorporate into your own life.
Check it out. Now, I ain't trying to be the greatest. I used to hate hip-hop. Yep, because the women degraded, but too short made me laugh. Like a hypocrite, I played it. A hypocrite, I stated, though I only recited half. Omitting the word bitch, cursing, I wouldn't say it. Me and dog couldn't relate to the bitch I dated. Forgive my favorite word for hers and hers alike, but I learned it from a song I heard and sort of liked. Yeah.
How did that resolve where you ended up eventually embracing hip hop for yourself?
My introduction to hip hop, vulgar hip hop, was N.W.A. And it was through my father. I mean, my father would, to make his constituents mad, so to speak, his uptight constituents, he would play N.W.A., like in his car and in where he worked or what have you. But it was weird because eighth grade, and that was the music that I was introduced right back into. Actually, sixth grade through eighth grade, I was going to junior high school. And my peers were listening to Spice One and, like, N.W.A. and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's like, I got reintroduced to hip hop through that same music that as a little kid, you know, I was like, I can't really rock with this. Like, they're cussing. Yeah. I'm not supposed to be cussing. And I always had variety. You know, I knew it was other genres of music that I could rock with.
What was your dad doing? I want to interview his dad. Because his father was a Green Beret.
Yep.
Green Beret.
And active with the Black Panthers.
Yes.
In the community. I mean, that's a fascinating combination. Martial arts guy.
Martial arts master, engineer. Any and everything.
Did he dislike the cliched gangster, you know, misogynistic, glorifying violence and drugs and demeaning women? Did he dislike that in N.W.A. or was he just getting off on N.W.A.?
I don't know, because my father would play N.W.A. and then he would open up a karate school in like the worst part of the city on purpose. He would go out at night with a team of his crew, his black belts. And it would go and shut down all of the drug spots, all of the dope spots, man. All the gangbangers on that entire block. And I think that was the balance, you know what I'm saying, that started to set up with me, too. He would be this heroic pillar of the community, and then he would be bumping N.W.A.
Well, but, you know, so obviously if people are getting the idea that you grew up in a unique household, your mother was just as unique. She was a chef.
Mm-hmm.
They encouraged you to be whatever you wanted to be and to find your own path. And you turned toward Sunni Islam. You know, it wasn't a religious household, but you investigated the Muslim religion.
We were born Muslim. Mm-hmm. So my father and my mother were Muslim when they got married. But what it was we were Muslim, and that was kind of like the backbone, the moral, ethical backbone, you know, of the family. But it wasn't practiced thoroughly in the house.
Yeah. Well, so what made you want to investigate that? And I mean, if people don't know, Food and Liquor is the name of the album. It's more of a sociological statement. Mm-hmm. On the west side, south side of Chicago. I mean, in every big city.
Yeah.
You know, on every corner, there's a Food and Liquor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the deli and the liquor store. But you don't smoke and you don't drink.
Right.
You don't do drugs. And you're serious about – because there is a serious side of Lupe. This is the portion where we want to get the serious side of Lupe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we had the whimsical Lupe fiasco.
Yeah. But, you know, we're going to have you do American Terrorist for us. And that's why don't we hear it and then talk about what that is and how that relates to your religion, if you would.
Okay.
All right. So American Terrorist by Lupe Fiasco.
I am Lupe Fiasco. And I proudly present to you the incomparable, incredible Matthew Santos. And this song right here, I dedicate this song right here to you. Yeah. Check. We came through the storm, nooses on our necks, and a smallpox blanket to keep us warm on a 747 on the Pentagon lawn. Wake up, the alarm clock is connected to a bomb. Anthrax lab on the West Virginia farm. Shorty ain't learned to walk, already heavily armed. Civilians and little children is especially harmed. Camouflage, Taurus, Bibles and glorious Qurans. The books that take you to heaven and let you meet the Lord there have become misinterpreted reasons for warfare. Reread them with blind eyes, I guarantee you there's more there. Rich must be blind cause they ain't see the poor there. You need to open up a park, just close 10 schools. We don't need them, can you please call the fire department? They down here marching for freedom, burn down ATPs, turn their TVs on to teach them and move.
more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better and better they live. Whatever they wanna take, whatever they wanna take, whatever, whatever it is. The more that you wanna learn, the more that you try to learn, the better and better it gets.
Come on.
America.
Not a poor Ku Klux man, see that we all brothers, not cause things the same, because we like the same color, and that's grain, now that's Maine. He can't burn his cross, cause he can't afford the gasoline. Now if a Muslim woman strapped with a bomb on a bus, with the seconds running, give you the jitters, just imagine an American-based Christian organization planning the poison water supplies to bring the second coming quicker. If they ain't living properly, break them off with a little democracy. Turn their whole culture to a mockery. Give them Coca-Cola for their property. Give them guns, get them young, give them fun. If they ain't giving it up, then they ain't getting none. And don't give them all, no, man, just give them some. It's the paper, some of these cops must be Al-Qaeda player on.
The more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better and better they live. Whatever they wanna take, whatever they wanna take, whatever, whatever it is. The more that you wanna learn, the more that you try to learn, the better and better it gets.
Come on.
America, terrorism.
And bring it back live.
The more money that they make, the more money that they make, the better and better they live. Whatever they wanna take, whatever they wanna take, whatever, whatever it is. The more that you wanna learn, the more that you try to learn, the better and better it gets.
That's right. Black man fool, give red man liquor, red man fool, black man nigga, give yellow man tool, make him railroad biller, also give him pan, make him pull gold from river, give black man crack, blocks and teams, give the red man craps, slot machines, and bring it back, 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 don't give the black man fool, give red man liquor, red man fool, black man nigga, give yellow man tool, make him railroad biller, also give him pan, make him pull gold from river, give black man crack, glocks and tings, and get a red man craps, slot machines, and bring it back,
bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back, bring it back.
Yeah.
All right, that was American Terrorist from Lupe Fiasco live in the studio. And talk about that track a little, Lupe. You're flipping the script a little bit there. I'm on who's the terrorist in the world. And
yeah.
We got some issues here at home that may be described as
anthrax
terrorism
in
as well.
The West Virginia lab.
Yeah, you know. Just a little. American Terrorist was my attempt to give a history, not the history, but a history of terrorism in America. And at a period of time where America uses the word terrorist pointing, you know, as opposed to like, okay, we know what terrorism is because we did it for 450 some odd years. And so it's just kind of to level the playing field a little bit by giving people who are an audience to myself, to like, look, yeah, America, yeah, okay, there might be terrorists over here, but the history of America is this, it's the Ku Klux Klan, you know, it's slavery, it's all these other things that you might not know about in the present day, you know, like it's not just Islamic terrorists and it's not just terrorists in Colombia and it's not just terrorists in this part of the world. Like the terrorism is a method used and utilized by every nation and every society since the beginning of time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a part of my responsibility on this platform to do that when I can, when I know of a subject, to express it and tell it and try and get people, not to get people to change their ideas, but give people more information on a particular subject so they can make more informed decisions about who they're going to vote for or who they're not going to vote for.
Mm-hmm. It's still mind-blowing a little bit to me that people like Jay-Z endorsing your work, getting it out on a major label, but was part of the difficulty in actually getting a record out, as we said, 6 years, three label deals. Was part of it because of the fact that you did want to do it your own way and kind of address some of the subject matter that really isn't addressed in mainstream hip-hop that often? I mean, was there a point there where you thought about giving up because it wouldn't happen for you at a major label level?
Honestly, I can't say yes. I can't say that it was because of I wanted to talk about a particular subject, because my early work is a reflection of what you hear now. It is Jay-Z, it's Nas, it's very violent, you know. It comes from entertaining my peers, you know. And my peers, even though I may be this, you know, somewhat educated, you know, astute, pompous young man, my peers are, you know, they're from the hood, they're ex-convicts, mm-hmm. you know, they're ex-drug dealers, or, you know, they've been to jail more than twice. So that's what I come from. You know, I come from the projects. I come from the hood. I come from the ghetto. And so that's my constituency. That's who I was entertaining. And it went from, okay, you're entertaining your hood, you make people happy, whatever, talking about guns and shooting people and this, that, and the third. But when you put that up against the music business and every other artist, that's what they're doing. They're talking about the same things. And it went from me maturing, actually, because through that 6 years, that was from being 18 until being now, you know, a month away from being 25, I grew up and I matured. And it was like, I got more comfortable with myself. And it was like, let me talk about those things that I like to do, you know. Even it goes down to, like, my album cover. People are like, yo, your album cover is kind of gay.
If people don't know, you're floating out there in space. It's like the Star Wars scene.
That hardness, that sort of that pressure, that peer pressure to be hard. Even the women in rap have got to be hard.
Yeah.
I mean, what is that? You know,
it's a peer pressure. It's the same thing about kick push and skateboarding. It's like people don't skateboard in the hood, you know, because there's a certain stereotypical set of, I guess, things that you must do to keep your authenticity intact when you come from the hood. You can't wear a suit. Wearing a suit, you're either going to church or you're going to work for the white man, you know. Or you can't do this because you're trying to be white. Or you can't do this because you're trying to be, you know, Puerto Rican. You can't do this because you're trying to be whatever. And in a lot of those cases, trying to be something that you're not means that you want to progress. You know, you want to get out of your particular situation. You want to expand your horizons and you want to experience new things. And so that's the cap. That's the ceiling of the hood. That's what keeps people in the hood, that peer pressure, that self-oppression. And so for me, it was, let me break out of that. You know, let me write a song about, you know, a giant robot walking around. That's a project building. Let me write a song about, you know, skateboarding. Let me write this song because it's a shout to that system, you know, the system that we created ourselves, to be like, that's not cool. You know, I'm going to shake it up a little bit. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be different from that, and I'm going to be proud to be different. And it's going to be dope, and it's going to compete with your Young Jeezy. It's going to compete with your Rick Ross, and it's going to compete with your Lil Wayne. And I'm going to get just as much and even more than they do.
Yeah. Lupe Fiasco, it's been a pleasure. Waslu Muhammad Jayco, as mom and dad would say.
Gregory.
Pleasure having you on the show.
Jim.
And James.
Sorry, James. Jim.
Fresh to death she is. From her steps to her set she is.
So coming up on Sound Opinions, Jim and I will review records by Norah Jones and Clap Your Hands Say Yeah, and I will drop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox. That's in a minute on Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media.
Brushed off my ears, even cut my hair for it. Cause normally I don't care for it. Don't even be looking for like that. Then there go it. Yeah, right over there. So I prepared to poet. Little scared, my stare lowered. Mama said, have no fear. Plus I'm already out of my chair. Gather up my ears on my square from here forward. It's nothing right, so here go it. Whisper in the ears, kinda crowded in here. Wish you cared to blow it. She said, yeah. The starry skies above me, won't you please come down and hug me? Think I found love in this club tonight. Whoa, whoa. Never met her before, but I think I like her like a metaphor.
It's hard to get in the car we sit. From the intro, she rolled down a window just in case I was a schizo. I compliment her on the common sense.
Growing weak, and we're gonna be sinking soon.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions from Chicago Public Radio and American Public Media. What you're listening to is a new track called Sinking Soon from the third Norah Jones album, Not Too Late, just out, guaranteed to debut at number one. I guarantee it, Jim. I will stake my career on it. That will be a number one album.
But she's already
because
making
the
news.
Other two have been number one albums.
Yeah, no, he's already making news for the most pre-orders ever and the most downloaded song ever. She's already sold 15 million copies of those first two records and got 8 Grammys under her belt, and she's 27.
27 years old, and she's already had a career's worth of album sales. This record very much in the same vein. We're talking about Norah Jones, who knows what she does, and she does it very, very well for the 15 million people who have bought her records. If you wandered around in shopping malls, if you've been in elevators, you have heard Norah Jones's music somewhere. It is ubiquitous. Jim and I will dig into why it is ubiquitous, why it works, and maybe why it doesn't. But let's play a track first from the new record. It's called My Dear Country from Norah Jones. It's on Sound Opinions.
T'was Halloween and the ghosts were out, and everywhere they'd go, they'd shout. And though I covered my eyes, I knew they'd go away. But fear's the only thing I saw, and 3 days later was clear to all that nothing as scary as election day. The newsmen know what they know, but they know even less than what they say. And I don't know who I can trust for the coward made. 'Cause we
That is a song called My Dear Country, if you're still awake and still listening to Sound Opinions, by Norah Jones from her third album. It's indicative of a slight change on this record. It's the first album that she hasn't made with the longtime jazz producer Arif Martin, because he passed away. She made it with her boyfriend Lee Alexander, who's her songwriting partner, the bassist in her band. There are some things I like about Norah Jones, okay? She does try to get this live in an intimate cabaret setting to the music. It's well recorded, and you feel like you're in a small room and she's singing to her. She, you know, is obviously a part of the pop star-making machine, but she doesn't pander to it.
Mm-hmm.
And with her spare time in New York, she plays in all these different bands on Monday nights to 10 people. You know, she does glam rock. She does country cabaret. She appeared with Mike Patton of Faith No More in this weird art rock project, Peeping Tom. Okay, these are all the things I like about Norah Jones. I just wish she made albums that didn't put me to sleep. It's like she is to the real deal of jazz and cabaret music what a frothy chai latte is to a double espresso, okay? It's not even in the same ballpark. It's this sugary concoction of who knows what that sort of resembles the real deal, but it sure ain't.
Well, Jim, I would question the use of sugary. I'm not sure it's poppy enough, really. I mean, she's sort of blending different genres here, pop, country, blues, a little bit of jazz, without being any one of them. What it is very laid back, very conversational. There's a warmth to it. The problem is it's all in one area. You know, she's got this big palette of music that she's working with, and she paints it in this one little corner all the time. I kind of like that in small doses. I think there are some brilliant moments on this record. I think a track like Wish I Could, the very first track on the record, everything is pared back. There's a couple of cellos on that song, an acoustic guitar, her voice. There is nothing gratuitous about that track. Everything is there for a reason.
But Ellie is standing in the door with a look on her face I can't just ignore. She tells me that her heart is sore.
It's beautifully recorded, beautifully sung, and in small doses, she's very, very fine to listen to. But over the long haul, there's some interesting things being said on this record.
Well, well,
she's
that,
engaging some political content.
That's
here.
What I meant about Sugary, Greg, mm-hmm. is she never gets excited. The song that we heard before, Sinkin' Soon, that's obviously about the wake of Hurricane Katrina. We've got a captain who's too proud to say he dropped the oar as he steers the boat,
yeah.
right? And My Dear Country is about looking at, from the perspective of those couple of days between Halloween and November 3rd,
yeah.
looking at the perspective, nothing is more frightening in this country right now than an election. Those are some heavy thoughts, and yet she delivers them like, da-da-da.
Yeah, very light. She's almost too modest for her own good. I'd put her in the same class of singers like Madeline Peru and Patricia Barber, fine singers who'd make very modest, low-key kind of records, but aren't particularly adventurous. The difference is Norah Jones sells 15 million records, and those other artists that I mentioned don't.
Yeah.
So as a result, she has an undue amount of attention paid to her. I think she'd be very comfortable being sort of a modest, medium-selling kind of artist, which is really what she deserves to be. But instead, all this attention has been put on her, and I don't think she's got the broadness, the vim, the vigor to actually, you know, live up to those expectations. So what we have here is a very modest, listenable record. It's not embarrassing in any way, but it is not a buy-it record.
No, it's a warm glass of milk. You know,
yeah.
how are you going to get excited and say trash it? No, you know, but you certainly don't need to buy it because it's going to be everywhere.
Yeah,
if you go buy
you'll hear it.
If you buy a coffee at any point in the next 6 months, you are going to hear this record.
All right, that's a burn it from both of us on the Norah Jones record.
And I'm touched by the same sad feeling of dread.
That is a song with a very long title. Mama, Won't You Keep Them Castles in the Air and Burning, from the second album by Clap Your Hands Say Yeah, just out, Some Loud Thunder is the name of the disc. Greg, it's impossible to talk about these fellows who were on Sound Opinions when they were touring in support of that first album without mentioning that this Philadelphia-Brooklyn band was the big internet hype of 2005. Many indie rock bloggers and fanzines and magazines, you know, raved about their self-titled debut album, which was released entirely via the net. And this second album, they have opted to self-release it.
Mm-hmm.
They got a lot of offers from major labels and independent labels. Come join the system. You've proven what you can do. We can do even more for you now if you're part of a real record company. And yet, with all eyes upon them, they put out their second album on their own and presumably funded it themselves as well. They went up to upstate New York in the middle of nowhere, where one David Fridman has a recording studio, most famously home base for the Flaming Lips and Mercury Rev. Let's hear something from this album. This is a track called Satan Said Dance from the second album by Clap Your Hands Say Yeah, Some Loud Thunder on Sound Opinions. We'll be right back.
clap your hands, say yeah, answering the musical question, what do you do after you sell more than 100,000 records on your own? What do you do for a follow-up?
Yeah.
Try to sell another 100,000 records, okay?
On your own.
On your own. And that's exactly what they're trying to do. More power to them. The story has, in some ways, eclipsed the actual music. But I have to say this about the debut album from Clap Your Hands, Say Yeah. It was an uneven record. There were some great moments on it and some almost unlistenable moments on that record.
Yeah, same is true here.
Very uneven. Absolutely. What's different about this record is the production values, as you mentioned, much higher. I mean, that first record was recorded in various studios over a span of a couple of years.
Yeah.
This one was recorded in a concentrated period of time with Fridman, who clearly is a master of atmosphere.
Oh,
there's
yeah.
layers upon layers of in this record that are really intricate, really fun to listen to. The more you listen to this record, the more you draw out of it sonically. Very interesting, dark, subversive kind of record here, very textured.
In a lot of ways, this is the album the Flaming Lips should have made last time around with Fridman.
I think what they've done here, Jim, is they've made two albums. They've made half a great record with just really accessible songs, incredible sonic moments courtesy of Fridman. Alec Owensworth, the singer, whose voice admittedly is an acquired taste, I think has some fabulous moments on this record where he just lets himself go. I hear a lot of that David Byrne. When David Byrne sort of flings himself at a song, it's really exciting. You think, oh, wow, that's kind of a geeky voice, but at the same time, it's thrilling to hear a guy jump out of his skin that way.
Yeah, it really
amuses me. And Alec Owensworth does that as well.
I can't help but chuckle at how far out of their way a lot of the indie rock fans of this band go to not mention the Talking Heads.
Yeah.
You know, but it's like it's so there, and either you're going to like that voice or you're not, and it's so obviously an influence, it's just absurd. And you know, if the last album was Talking Head 77, this one is Fear of Music or More Songs About Buildings and Food.
And nothing wrong with that, but the other half of the record, Jim, is a difficult slog. I mean, there are some just, I think, intentionally difficult moments, like they didn't want to be too obvious. We've talked to these guys, we kind of know them as kind of, you know, arty guys. They want to do their own twisted take on indie rock, and they're not going to be obvious. They're not going to give you the verse, chorus, bridge song. They're going to try to pervert the song structure a little bit, and they're going to try to throw elements that are kind of going to throw you off. You even heard it in that song, Satan Said Let's Dance. Here's a straightforward disco beat, and there's all these little noises popping up through it, you know? So they're not going to be obvious about it. So as a result, they haven't made, I think, the beginning-to-end great album that they might have in them. I think if you put the best moments of the first album together with the best moments
you'd
of
have
this
a great
record, you have a great record.
Well, there's this indie rock curse, Greg, where we don't want to be seen in any way, shape, or form as doing what John Mellencamp did, you know, selling out to the man, right?
Yeah.
So, and we applaud that. That's great. Do your own thing. But then there's, you know, it can be taken too far where I'm going to spit in your face. I'm going to try so hard to be weird and myself that I'm not. I mean, you know, so on the first album, with this horrible, unlistenable, calliope circus-like song, this album they go even further, where they have this horrible, unlistenable, distortion-drenched song, which you can't even make through. So we rate things on the buy it, burn it, trash it scale. I have to say, this is a burn it record for those good moments. The rest are skippable.
Yeah, I would agree. A burn it record all the way. Some really, really great moments and some really, really unlistenable ones.
I tell you, little buddy, this whole island is bewitched.
Remember, we were shipwrecked together.
Yes, indeed, stranded together. Most weeks here on Sound Opinions, Greg or I take a turn popping a quarter into the desert island jukebox. Greg, it's your turn.
Well, thank you, Jim. I'm excited to play this next track because I just saw this band a few days ago. They rarely play. In fact, for the last 5 years, people have been wondering where they've gone. I'm talking about the Chamber Strings. They're led by a musician named Kevin Jr., who grew up in Ohio, ended up in Chicago, and made two brilliant orchestral pop records, Gospel Morning in 1997, followed up by Month of Sundays in 2001. combining, you know, soul, pop, rock influences from the 60s and 70s, synthesizing those influences in really artful ways, much like Alex Chilton did in Big Star, much like Ray Davies did in the late 60s Kinks. People may think, well, you're exaggerating. Kevin Jr. is not in their class. I really believe that Kevin Jr.'s music just hasn't been widely heard enough. Otherwise, people would be talking about him as one of the great songwriters of the last decade. The last 5 years have not been good ones for Kevin Jr. Had some issues with depression, was living on the streets in Los Angeles for a while as a homeless drug addict, cleaned himself up in recent months, got back together again with the band that made Month of Sundays in 2001, and started playing shows again. Very exciting news. Apparently have created enough new music to put out a new album sometime in 2007. But I can't wait for that album, Jim. I want to hear Chamber Strings music right now.
Right now, yeah.
And I go back to Month of Sundays for a classic track. I think one of the great tracks of the last few years. I don't understand why this was not a top 10 pop single. But you be the judge. Make it through the summer from the Chamber Strings on Sound Opinions.
If I could make it through the summer, I know that everything will be all mine. If I could make it through the summer, I know that everything will be all right. So let the leaves fall.
Let's make it through the summer from the Chamber Strings, my Desert Island Jukebox pick. Next week, Jim.
It's Valentine's Day.
We have to celebrate Valentine's Day, but of course we did it in Sound Opinions fashion, very twisted fashion. We did a live event at the Chicago Cultural Center. Robbie and Donna Folks helped us out. We looked at all aspects of Valentine's Day, not just the love side, but the lust side and also the love stinks side of Valentine's Day.
As always, we have some thank yous to say on the way out. Greg, Mary Gaffney recorded our performance with Lupe Fiasco. We get legal assistance from Dino Armiros. Tori Malatia is our executive producer and a man we love. American Public Media brings us Bad and Nationwide. And you know we love our production team. Matt Spiegel, Todd Bachman, Jason Saldana, and Robin Lynn.
They're all going to be in the front row when Sting comes out with his codpiece.
Spiegel was entirely too excited about that. Yeah.